This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
There's an old reporter saying that prediction is the lowest form of journalism. Now, I wouldn't swear by that, but there's certainly some truth in it at least. Fiction, however, is an entirely different story. When it comes to predicting what the future is going to look like and be like and feel like, fiction might be the way to go. And nobody in our time can beat the novelist William Gibson at prediction. Gibson's new novel is called Agency. Here's Josh Rothman, an editor at The New Yorker.
When William Gibson came up with the term cyberspace in the late 70s, there was no real internet to speak of. He'd been walking around Vancouver, which is where he lived, and he'd noticed kids playing video games in video arcades. And he noticed that when you went to a video arcade and you watch the kids, they would duck and weave as though they were in the game. And that alone was enough to get into his mind the idea that, yeah, we want to be in there. We want to be in the computer world. And in fact, that's true. We do want to live in the computer world. So much of what we've done with this technology over the last 30 years, 35 years, has been about finding new ways to merge the digital space and the real space. Finding ways to take a selfie and get it into the digital world as quickly as possible. He would be the first person to say he got a lot of technical details wrong about cyberspace. He pictured it as a virtual world, like a VR, like Tron. And that's not what it turned out to be. It turned out to be the browser on your phone. But what he got right was that people really want to be in a virtual world all the time. They're always thinking about wanting to be in a virtual world. And the thing is that, you know, that seems really futuristic, but it was true in 1979 in Vancouver. You just had to see it. And that's Gibson's, you know, special superpower. Just to look at the world that we're in right now and to notice the parts of it that are futuristic. Gibson's idea is if you want to see the future, you don't have to picture some totally different world. You just have to take seriously what you know already is coming. Like the scientists say, climate change is coming. That's the future. And one of the things you have to do, therefore, is you have to constantly update your sense of what the present is. You have to really look at the present and take it on board. And that means that sometimes things happen in the present, and they really mess up your concept of what the future was going to be. And that's what happened to Gibson when he was writing his new book.
This book mutated out of the book that I was writing the night of our most recent presidential election.
I spoke to William Gibson a couple of weeks ago at a reading in Brooklyn.
I had a book that I was thinking of as sort of a romp, and I woke up in the morning and I realized I'd never be able to write that book. Because that book was set in 2017, and I thought the zeitgeist I was working with is gone. Most people haven't noticed it yet, but it's gone. And by 2017, it'll be like really gone. After, you know, about 3 months of deep unhappiness, I realized one day that I was feeling a complete sense of unreality. Like, I did not believe at that moment in the news feed. And I thought, this is bullshit. This can't be happening. I'm dreaming. And then I thought, no, I'm having a surgical procedure. And they've got me way down under, but I'm starting to come up. And that's why I'm starting to question this ludicrous drugged reality that, and I thought, no, this shit's real. And I looked over at the laptop that contained my, I thought, dead novel, and I thought, what if Verti and Eunice are living in a stub in which that election went the other way?
So in Gibson's new book, it's called Agency, there are two time periods. There's a future and there's a present, and they've contacted each other. And the idea in the book is, whenever the future contacts the past, it makes a new timeline. It kind of makes a divergence, like a fork in the road. And this new timeline is called a stub. The people in the future have an interest in what's happening in these stubs. And that's because what lies between the stubs and them, or between us and the future, is something that Gibson calls the jackpot. And the jackpot is Gibson's term for basically, you know, the end of civilization and the natural world as we know it.
Are people happier there? She asked. Happier than they were here, then. I gather they aren't, particularly. Pity, she said. Ready for tilapia tacos? Place on Tottenham Court Road. Better Mexican in your new stub, no doubt. Why aren't they happy there? The drivers for the jackpot are still in place, but with less talk at that particular point. He took a seat at the table. They're still a bit in advance of the pandemics, at least. She took the seat opposite. Nothing before the 2020s has ever seemed entirely real to me. Hard to imagine they weren't constantly happy, given all they still had. Tigers, for instance.
So if you think about, like, a Michael Bay disaster movie, you know, it's one thing that does us in, like an asteroid or a plague or, you know, aliens, something like that, one thing. But that's not how Gibson thinks about this. The idea of the jackpot is, if some of the stuff you read about in the paper that's happening right now already, if all those scary things just keep happening, you get the jackpot. The reason it's called the jackpot is it's because, you know, it's like in the slot machine. If everything comes up cherries, if it turns out that the oceans do rise quite a lot, coronavirus actually is really bad, and there's actually many other coronaviruses. A lot of wildfires do happen and continue to happen. The hurricanes really are pretty bad. 80% of people die, and the result is a world that's clawing its way back, that's trying to survive and rebuild. It looks like this.
To the horizon stretched a regularly spaced array of towers, roughly similar in height, through which, she saw, lowering her gaze, wound a river's serpentine curves. There, said Rainey, pointing out something Verity couldn't distinguish. London Eye, only tall thing aside from the original shard that you'll have seen before. They took down what was left of the rest. These are called shards, too, after the first one. Relatively few are habitations. What are they? Windows were lit, a few, if the lights she saw were windows. They scrub the air, the woman said, behind them, now standing. An older, lower city at the feet of the towers, like Lycan in comparison. There were forests, too, she saw, with greenways between them. That's the Thames? Of course, said Rainey. But with more bridges, at least two of them planted with what looked like forests of their own, and tributaries, none of which Verity remembered. Some of them appeared to have been roofed with glass, illuminated. CG, Verity said. VR, AR, a game. That's the commonest initial assumption, the woman said, on first seeing it, though I suppose natives of eras earlier than yours might assume dream, hallucination, visit to a supernatural realm. You're saying it's the future? Entertain the idea, to one side, so to speak. A mere possibility.
Gibson isn't saying that this is inevitable, that there's no possible future but this future. He's just saying, if you look at what's happening right now, this certainly seems to be eminently reasonable. You're in a unique position of being someone who for a really long time has thought about and imagined the future. And how has that changed? How has our idea of the future changed over that span?
Well, something that I find quite significant is that, you know, my childhood self watching the wooden TV would hear or see the phrase the 21st century virtually every day, often several times every day, often with one or more exclamation points following it. It's like, it's coming, the 21st century. This is back like in 1953 or something. And how often do you hear the phrase the 22nd century? Don't hear it. Currently, we don't have a future in that sense. We no longer have that sort of cultural anticipation that we took for granted through most of the 20th century.
I mean, I sometimes feel that the future is sort of claustrophobically foretold. So, like, I think of, like, the Elon Musk future, yeah, which is, you know, all-powerful artificial intelligence takes over everything, and climate change happens, and all the terrible things that will come from that happen. And in that sense, it feels like the future, it's almost hard to think about because it feels closed off. I wonder, is that how you feel about the future?
It isn't. Well, something I've watched, having been a science fiction fan since I was 12 or 13, I began to realize that when science fiction writers got old, they started to complain about the world ending and everything going to hell in a handbasket. And it seemed to me that probably when everyone gets old, the world does end because the world they grew up in starts to go away. But then there's this thing of sort of transferring all of that onto a younger generation. So yeah, the world is ending, but young folks today, you know, what can you expect? That's ancient. Well, it turns out that's ancient. You know, you can find that on pot sherds from Babylon. It's always been going on. You can find it in ancient Greece. So I put it at the top of my list of kind of don't do things. Like when you get old, don't be that guy. Don't be that guy, because it's bullshit. Like, things are gonna go forward. And I think I was right, but now I find myself old and looking at a situation that really does not look good. And it has, like all of those grumpy old sci-fi uncles of mine, I heard moaning in the 70s and 80s about, you know, how the world was going to hell in a handbasket. They still believed in a future. And now I'd like to believe in a future. And again, I kind of go, well, human nature, and kind of look at some of the worst examples of that around these days, and it doesn't really look good. And so I'm torn between believing that I'm just doing what the uncles have always done, and that I'm recognizing something that we haven't ever as a species actually seen before.
The novelist William Gibson. He spoke with The New Yorker's Joshua Rothman at a live event at Murmur Theater in Brooklyn. Gibson's new book, Agency, is out now.